May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Knuckles, and together with Steve Sundra and Stephen Malouf, I represent the Democratic Republic of Congo in this appeal against FG Hemisphere Associates, LLC. The rulings under review in this appeal are minute orders denying the Congo's motions to vacate default judgments entered against it in September of 2004 and January of 2005. Those default judgments are entered in separate causes, but those causes have been consolidated here. The issue in this case is whether the default judgments are void for want of personal jurisdiction. As this court knows, this is a Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act case, and in Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act cases, service of process dictates personal jurisdiction. Because the Congo is a foreign state, we're looking at subsection A of section 1608 of Title 28. Section A has four subparts. Those subparts must be enlisted in chronological order to the extent that they apply.
And Congo here was served by diplomatic channels, correct?
They were served, yes, sir. That would be under 1608A4.
And if Congo preferred to be served by mail rather than diplomatic channels, wouldn't the time to have raised that been a lot sooner than it was?
There was an appeal. The Congo has had one course of conduct in this litigation, and that's to resist the execution of its ambassador's home and its charge d'affaires home. It has not been a part of this litigation in any other sort or fashion, other than to resist discovery efforts.
One way to resist the writs would have been to say that the underlying judgments were improper because there had never been service of process.
That did not arise. If the court will recall from the prior appeal, the Congo appeared on an emergency basis, obtained an emergency stay from this court, proceeded through that appeal, and before the cause was even remanded, it moved to vacate the judgments.
The argument's a very formalist argument about diplomatic service was not preferred. We preferred service by mail. But it seems to me that if you're going to, you know, make that kind of formalist argument on A4 versus A3, that the waiver rules also should kick in as well. And that if you wanted service by mail, you can make that argument early on.
I don't think it's a matter of want or desire. I think it's a matter of strict adherence to Section 1608.
Okay. Well, how is Congo harmed by getting served by diplomatic channels rather than by mail?
I understand that this will be not a permanent fix for the Congo. This will be temporary. I believe that if...
And the fix could have been accomplished early on.
Had it been known of, that's correct. It took me energy and time to find out, if I go back to my original argument. First subsection didn't apply. We're all in agreement there. First subsection of 1608 says, pursuant to an agreement between the parties. The second subsection says, pursuant to an international convention. The parties also agree there was no such international convention. The third does apply. The third states that you can serve through the clerk of the district court a copy of the petition, notice of suit, and translations here in French to the head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Now, they sent it to a gentleman named Leonard Shea Okatunda. He was at one point the head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He was no longer the Ministry of Foreign Affairs when an Ergo Invest DD, who's the predecessor in interest of FG Hemisphere, served the papers. That was on August 3rd, 2003. Minister Mangalabi was. I'm sensitive to your concerns.
Just to make sure, you do not claim affirmatively that the correct name of the actual Minister of Foreign Affairs is needed.
No, I do believe that.
I'm sorry. So you're saying that if the erroneously included name had simply been omitted, there would be a failure to comply with A3?
Well, that would be a different. I haven't thought that completely through, but the way that the package was written, it stated Leonard Shea Okatunda, Ministry of Foreign Affairs. That's what was stated. Didn't say head of Ministry of Foreign Affairs or anything of the like. That would be a different situation, and I don't know what the answer would be, sir.
Well, the statute certainly doesn't mention the name.
No, it just says head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs or foreign state involved. And I posit that that did not occur here, and therefore service under Section A4 was unavailable. Judge Bates holding in Doe 1, which is a Palestinian civilians versus Israeli case, is instructive in that regard. they proceeded to serve through A2. I'm sorry, forgive me. A2 was available. There was an international convention for service of process. They did not use that method. They went directly to A3. And Judge Bates held that that was not permissible. If A2 was there, you had to use it. And you had to strictly adhere to it, as this court has ruled in Transero. Those are my arguments, Your Honor. If there are any questions, I'll reserve the remaining of my time.
Why is it that you should not be charged with having waived this personal jurisdiction argument?
Well, I personally had no authority to waive anything on behalf of the Congo. And second...
Well, why shouldn't... The Congo didn't raise it. Rule 12H requires them to raise it, just like a lot of other defenses, including statute of limitations and so on and so forth. And you litigated this. You entered the case, litigated it for 13 months, never raised it. Why isn't that the end of it?
I would say this. The Supreme Court has ruled that foreign sovereigns are immune. The exercise of jurisdiction over a foreign sovereign is an extraordinary act, and one which requires precise standards called for in the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. Those weren't done here.
Well, that's right, and the precise standards there, they're also precise standards, as Judge Randolph says,
under
for waiver.
Yes, sir, under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 12H. The motion was filed under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 60B4, and that provision states that it can be filed.
It's B3, is it?
I believe it's B4 because the judgments are void. And under that provision, the motion can be filed within a, quote, reasonable time. The Congo filed it within a reasonable time. Now, I expect that you hear from FG Hemisphere that we've made arguments in a prior appeal that the focus should be on the execution of the immune properties. And that was in response to their consistent arguments that we should somehow be taught a lesson or punished because we didn't previously appeal.
My memory of it, since Judge Williams and I sat on that panel, was that not exactly the way you framed it, was that we're not challenging the judgments as void. We're just challenging the execution on these properties.
That I can assure you that wasn't the counsel's intent, Your Honor, was that to tee up the issues at hand and to not have the Congo's default serve as some sort of prejudice against it, which FG Hemisphere lobbied to Judge Leon in the trial court.
I'm sorry, you referred to discovery disputes. Were there discovery disputes brought before the court before the Congo's motion to dismiss inadequate service?
They were, Your Honor. While the prior appeal was pending, FG Hemisphere sought discovery of literally every asset of the Congo worldwide. We believe that that was inappropriate, number one, in light of the appeal, and number two, because it well exceeded the jurisdiction of the court. The trial court, Judge Leon, overruled all of the Congo's objections and ordered our compliance with the discovery.
But the question of proper service would have been quite pertinent at that point.
And those objections were made, sir. The objections were made that we were immune from the suit.
No, the objection is to the character of service.
How was the Congo served with the discovery? Is that the question?
No. Let me get the sequence.
Yes, sir.
Correct. Did you raise the objection relating to service at the outset of the litigation over discovery or later?
I will consult my timeline. I believe the motion to vacate was filed in November of 2006, but the discovery was filed sooner, and objections to those discovery were filed before 2006,
right.
November 2006.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have that sequence?
Yes, Your Honor. The pertinent dates, from our perspective, are May 31st, 2005, when the Democratic Republic of the Congo first appeared. August 11th, 2005 is when Judge Leon issued his order regarding executional immunity. Discovery started in July of 2005. So while the issue was still in the district court on the first go-round and before executional immunity had come up to this court on appeal, I believe the first formal filing with Judge Leon relating to discovery was in September of 2005. I believe FG Hemisphere, we moved to compel. And the DRC opposed that motion, and I believe that was in October 2005. All of this gets back to
the... And then the formal objection on service is raised...
Is raised in June or July of 2006, about 13 months after the DRC's initial appearance. And all of that, Judge Williams, goes back to Judge Kavanaugh's question and the answer to it, which was that there was some kind of an emergency here. And whatever the rules might be for an emergency in a true situation of emergency, we don't have anything like that here. Whether you look at it from the perspective of the first filing in May 2005, there was a second filing, a Rule 60 filing, that came in July of 2005. So the DRC is before the district court not once but twice on executional immunity and never once raises personal jurisdiction. There's a 2.5-month time span from May of 2005 until August of 2005 before the issue gets up to this court. You can look at it from the perspective of the 13-month span, as you suggested, Judge Randolph, from the time that it was first raised in the district court, that is, from the time the DRC first appeared in the district court until the time it raised its objection to service of process. And from any one of those perspectives, there's no straight-faced argument that can be made here that there was any kind of emergency that might excuse the failure to raise this threshold objection. As the court's well aware, service of process and relatedly personal jurisdiction is a threshold objection. It needs to be raised at the outset, and it's particularly susceptible to waiver, not only because it's a threshold objection, and one as to which it is utterly incompatible with when a litigant shows up, participates in litigation before a court, avails themselves of the court, submits themselves to the jurisdiction of the court, and then is heard afterwards to say that the court had no jurisdiction. So personal jurisdiction is waivable in that sense. Moreover, because it leads to the possibility of sandbagging and substantial prejudice, and I don't want to suggest that there has been sandbagging here, but there is certainly the possibility of real prejudice. As we indicate in our papers, litigation has been pending in the Central District of California for close to 3 years now. It's a suit by FG Hemisphere against the Democratic Republic of Congo. It is an effort to execute on properties. The effort to execute is predicated directly on the default judgments that are at issue here. And if the DRC is heard to come in at this late date and raise an objection to service of process, attacking the underlying default judgments, then those 3 years of litigation will have been for naught.
We've said as well, though, that that foreign sovereigns are entitled to an extra chance, I think is the language we've used.
I don't know if I would go so far as to say extra chance. The language in practical concepts that often gets cited is that an intolerant adherence to default judgments might be inappropriate. But the line between perhaps giving a sovereign a little bit of an extra thumb on the scale and ignoring conduct of the sort that's gone on here, those are two very different things. As an initial matter, look at a case like practical concepts. There's certainly no suggestion there of express waiver, and that's exactly what we have here. The DRC repeatedly stated, both to Judge Leon and to this court, that it was not challenging the underlying default judgments. And so whatever may be...
There's ambiguity in that.
Yeah. Suppose you don't have that.
Let me begin with Judge Williams' question, if I may. I don't know how much ambiguity there is. I'd point the court to page 38 of the supplemental appendix. The DRC said, the Congo is not seeking relief from the underlying judgment at page 54 of the supplemental appendix. The Congo does not dispute.
Ambiguity is, does that mean in the matter before the court or more broadly?
The only way that one could reasonably read that language would be to suggest that the Congo meant to say, we're not challenging it now, but we plan to raise it at some point down the line, perhaps in the district court, who knows when. And I don't think that's a...
Or we're non-committal on the point.
Well, that's right, and that goes back to my answer to Judge Kavanaugh's question, is that one doesn't get to be non-committal about personal jurisdiction. There is or isn't an objection there, and it needs to be raised at the outset. Judge Kavanaugh, to respond to your question, even if there weren't express waiver here, this is, again, a very, very different case from practical concepts. Practical Concepts raised the question, what happens when there is delay in a foreign sovereign showing up in the first place? And this court said, in dicta, but it said, and the earlier panel in this case reiterated, under those circumstances, foreign sovereigns maybe get a little bit of an extra thumb on the scale. The difference there is that in Practical Concepts, the sovereign, when it did show up, preserved and presented all of its objections. And that's clear from footnote 1 of the district court opinion, where the district court lists out a variety of threshold objections that Bolivia there made. That's like the first appeal in this case. But once the DRC has showed up, it has an objection to, or it has an obligation to raise its various objections. It showed up and it said, we're challenging the ability to execute on these properties. We're raising executional immunity. And I would submit, Judge Williams, that if you look at the couple of passages that I cited, as well as about a dozen others that are on page 13 of our brief, when the DRC finally showed up, it said, this is the only thing we're raising. We're not raising personal jurisdiction. And when you layer on top of that the length of the process that played out, both in the district court and in this court, and the ongoing discovery litigation that was a part of that, this case is just worlds apart from Practical Concepts. If anything, Practical Concepts demonstrates why there was waiver in this case.
So your argument is even if you'd gone directly under A4, for example, never tried the mailing route, they still would have had to raise that at some point before 13 months down the road.
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor, at least as respects the waiver argument. I mean, this is personal jurisdiction, and it has to be raised. I'd point the court to Foremost McKesson, which is a 1990 decision, I believe, of this court, and there Judge Edwards, writing for the panel, applies traditional Rule 12H standards in looking at personal jurisdiction. It's simply the case that foreign sovereigns can and do waive objections to personal jurisdiction, and that has to be the case. However heavily the thumb can weigh on the scale, there has to come a point at which a sovereign must be able to waive an objection to personal jurisdiction. Otherwise, you are right back in the heartland of the problems with personal jurisdiction that have led any number of courts to recognize that you can have waiver express, implied, waiver implied by conduct in the personal jurisdiction context, precisely because you have these dangers of sandbagging, prejudice, and whatever else. If there are no further questions about waiver, I'd like to move on to the underlying service issue. Under 1608A3, the simple requirement is that service must be effectuated on the head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. What we have here is a situation in which the Democratic Republic of Congo was being sued. In those papers, they were sent to, the first line in the address, the Democratic Republic of Congo, they were sent to the foreign ministry at the official address of the foreign ministry. There is only one objection here, and that objection is that including the name of the recently former head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs somehow obviated service and so infected.
What if it was just the wrong name altogether? In other words, it wasn't a former head, it was just some third name.
But absolutely still random, no,
yes,
no connection with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
But it still went to the ministry.
I think under those circumstances, the better rule would be to say that service probably had been properly effectuated. If all of the other facts here remain constant, I think it is more than reasonably clear from these papers, particularly where it is the DRC being sued qua sovereign, and the official is simply the recipient, the passive recipient of the service documents. I think that with all of these other indicia that the documents were going to the head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in an effort to sue the sovereign.
Did your client receive any, or you, receive any response after service?
Under the 1608A3 service, Your Honor?
Right.
No. And that's sort of the second level issue here is that even if it could be said that there were some formalistic defect in service under A3, service here wasn't effectuated under A3. The way that the FSIA operates is you try these methods in order, and with A3, you send these documents off, and if you don't get a response, you wait 30 days and you move on to A4.
Now, well, that's, when you served on A4, what sort of response did you get from the Congo?
I'm not sure I can represent, Your Honor, what the response may have been, but the rule with A4 is I don't believe any response is required. Once you get to A4 and you have formal diplomatic correspondence through the Department of State, that's sort of the end of the line. And that, candidly, is the way the statute is meant to work. You go through whatever agreements you might have. You try out A3 through the clerk of court. And at the end of the day, A4 is your backstop. If you go through one,
so you did A4 because you received no response to your A3 service.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. You know, and our position is again that even if it could be said that there was some kind of formalistic defect under A3, service here wasn't effectuated under A3. The question is whether A3 was sufficiently complied with to be able to move on to A4. And no objection has been raised here. No argument has been made that there was any defect in the A4 service. I mean, that's sort of the background tapestry against which to view all of this. There's no argument here about the underlying debts. There's no argument here about the underlying arbitral judgments. There's no argument here that service was ultimately properly effectuated under A4.
There's one statutory conundrum, which is how do you read cannot be made in the intro clause of A4? You know, you're interpreting cannot be made to mean was not made. It's not clear. You want to give me your best interpretation of cannot be made?
Well, I think the more pertinent language, at least in answering that question, is simply the language of A3, which is that service has to be made on the head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and our view is that service was properly effectuated on the head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, as that official title is commonly understood.
Suppose it had been sent to the wrong address.
I know that a panel never likes this answer, but that's a lot harder question. I mean, under those circumstances, there's a very real question to wonder whether that constitutes good faith service, whether the sovereign has received notice, whether it's received actual notice. But there's nothing like that here. I mean, we are really in a very narrow realm in which a hyper-technical argument is being made that frankly flies in the face of whatever case law and authority there is out there.
Hyper-technical arguments are good arguments in this context.
They can be, Your Honor, but they're not here. I'm sorry, Judge Williams.
No, go ahead.
Well, I would just direct the court to the authority that we've found on the issue. There's not a lot, and I think for good reason. I can't imagine this comes up a whole lot or that parties tend to make this argument. But the Echeverria and Coleman cases that we cite, both of those involve service on recently former government officials. And in both of those cases, the court looks at it and says, we're not going to notice this defect where you are effectuating official capacity service. Everyone understands when you've sent it to the name of the recently former official that service has been properly made. I mean, I think it's useful
to... The statute actually, A3 actually says, dispatched by the clerk of the court to the head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And you're, at least if I understand it correctly, your service wasn't addressed to this person, comma, head, comma, or chief, or something like that, Ministry of Foreign Affairs. It was the name and then Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
That's correct.
So that introduces an element of ambiguity that would not have been present if you had just put in head, comma, Ministry of Foreign Affairs, or Minister of Foreign Affairs, comma, Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Well, it's certainly right, Your Honor, that it introduces some more ambiguity than there would have been under those circumstances, but it's not the kind of ambiguity that should obviate service, and certainly not the kind of ambiguity that should obviate subsequent concededly valid service under A4. If there are no other questions, ask.
Is the copy of the complaint itself in the appendix? I haven't looked at it.
Of the complaint itself? I'm not sure, Your Honor. I'd have to double check. I'd be pleased to get back to the court on that.
The complaint was sent and it was translated into French, right? If one looked at the complaint, would one realize immediately that it was as against the individual in official capacity, or is it against the Congo?
It's against the Congo itself. It's
so
a
just
suit
against the Congo.
Congo. I'm sorry.
It just said against the Congo.
That's correct, Your Honor. The suit is against the Democratic Republic of Congo, and that's how the case is captioned.
Is that in the record of the district court, the complaint?
Yes, it certainly will be in the district court record, Your Honor.
Is it was the complaint the same, the one that was served by mail as opposed through diplomatic channels under A4, exactly the same?
I haven't verified and wouldn't want to make an erroneous representation, but I would be very surprised to find out that any change had been made in the complaint between the time of A3 and A4 service.
All right.
Thank you.
And there was no evidence of what happened within the in the government of the Democratic Republic of the Congo when the evidence or when the service was by mail.
No, I'm unaware of anything in the record. Perhaps Your Honor is thinking of the information that was submitted to the court in the last appeal, where
that was the default judgment.
That's exactly right,
and that
was subsequent service of different documents,
yeah.
And there was a question of whether things bounced around and whether translation was made or required, and there's no evidence in the record similar to that with regard to this service.
All right. Thanks.
Great. Thank you.
You have 5 minutes and 55 seconds.
I'll be briefer than that unless I receive questions. The Congo appeared in this litigation for the first time on an emergency basis to defend immune homes. The home of its ambassador and the home of its charge d'affaires. It did not receive notice of the motion to execute on those homes, and therefore it had to appear after the motion had been granted. Now, that motion to execute could have been after the default judgments were entered, as the motion to execute is going on in California in any courts. So in a part, FG Hemisphere is attempting to use the fact that they used the same court against the Congo here in these arguments. We had to appear in the same court to defend against those executions as we'd appear to contest the default judgments themselves, which I find to be an interesting nuance.
More troubling problem, I think, is the litigation over discovery. Because that seems wholly detached from the emergency relating to seizing the Congo's diplomatic properties.
That wasn't presented in any of the FG Hemisphere's papers or in my papers in the briefing to the trial court or to this court, other than to say that the discovery was issued, it was resisted, and then the court compelled the Congo to produce certain documents over its strenuous objection that it was immune from suit and immune from the discovery requests. Now, they've continually repeated that the Congo has somehow waived their rights to the FISA's protections. And I wanted to read, if I may, just a quick excerpt of what that claimed waiver was in response to. FG Hemisphere stated, after repeatedly ignoring court processes and court orders, it is unfair in the extreme for the DRC to appear and make these claims only at the point of losing its properties. Past history strongly supports the notion that the DRC's conduct, far from being the result of a war-torn country's inability to act, is part of a deliberate pattern. The DRC repeatedly forces its adversaries and the court to waste time and money moving forward with execution steps and then belatedly appearing at the point of executions with tales of woe designed to disrupt ongoing enforcement efforts. Now, it was in response to repeated accusations such as these that the Congo said the default judgments aren't at issue. Focus on the execution. Despite that, the trial court judge, Judge Leon, he stated, hopefully the plaintiff's necessity in relying upon this court to obtain a judgment in this matter will alert unsuspecting others of doing business with these defendants. So it doesn't appear that FG Hemisphere's...
Emergencies happen all the time, though. I mean, the complaint is filed, a motion for a TRO or a preliminary injunction is filed in connection with a complaint. It creates an emergency on the defendant's part. If the defendant comes in and files a responsive pleading that doesn't raise personal jurisdiction, they lose.
Well, that is what happened. But that's not... I believe we can all agree that that's not what happens in foreign sovereign immunities cases. Waivers... going to be very difficult to do for a foreign sovereign. The Congo.
The practical concept is Judge Ginsburg's opinion in that case said, "Look, let's not get too technical in holding foreign governments to rules." But the fact of the matter is, I heard hyper technical. You are being extraordinarily technical.
That's true.
And so why shouldn't the plaintiff in this court have their hands be tied behind their back if they want to be technical? So you can't raise that technicality. It was waived under 12H.
I would say, once again, I'm not completely certain why 12H continues to be referred to when it's at 60B4. And maybe that's something that my youth and experience lends to and not
you don't
anything
think it applies
else.
To 60B4 motion?
I didn't know that it did, Your Honor. I'd also say that it's kind of been stated that these errors were FG Hemisphere's errors. That's not accurate. An Ergo Invest DD was the plaintiff in the cause of action. The default judgments were entered, and immediately after they were purchased by FG Hemisphere. And it appears to me that they purchased void default judgments. I'd also assert to remember the context of the Congo at this state. It's 1 million square miles of land, 300 miles of paved road. This is a war-torn, horribly impoverished country that had its first democratic election since 1960.
How does that relate to whether service by diplomatic channels should instead have been done by mail?
I've heard arguments from FG Hemisphere.
It would seem actually that diplomatic channels would be preferred if that's the status. And I know a lot of countries have informed the State Department that they won't accept service, at least on according to the website, under A3 by mail. Diplomatic channels is preferred.
I think the question is simply, Section 1608A requires strict adherence or not? Can foreign sovereigns waive their immunity by defending immune properties for 13 months and then asserting their immunity or not? I don't have anything directly in response to which is the preferred method of the Congo, 3 or 4. What I do know is that you cannot go on to 4 until you've strictly adhered to 3. 3 was not strictly adhered to, so the default.
I was just making the point in response to your war-torn country point that it would seem diplomatic channels would be the preferred course. I don't see how it really relates to.
And the reason why I was stating that is we've heard about what's unfair to FG Hemisphere. You know, think of the equities here, judges. That's kind of what I've heard. You know, we're executing a lot of effort out in California. You know, why not just go ahead and ignore that slight error under 3? Well, the Congo's going through a lot, too. And they deserve the protections that they're entitled to. And those include those included in Section 1608. And it's not going to waive them. Unless the court has any further questions, that's it. Thank you.
Case is submitted.